Blog Talk Radio.
Radio podcast. It is I, Puma, along with Ice Water. We're going to be talking sports for the next 90 minutes. It's our overtime show podcast right here on Blog Talk Radio. How you doing, Ice?
Doing well, brother. Doing well.
Yeah, man. We're going to jump right into it, man. We just did our first 40. We talked a little bit about the Super Bowl, but if folks don't get to see the first 40, we'll talk a little bit about it right now. In our overlapping topic, I thought it was a clean play Super Bowl. I think some San Francisco 49ers fans are saying that, oh, the offensive pass interference shouldn't have been, and trying to give some excuses to it. But I'm like, you know, I can't argue with the officiating of the Super Bowl. There were any controversial calls or anything to me. I just think that there was one coach who is known to kind of play it tight, let his team go and go on a 21-0 run towards the end of the game to win the Lombardi Trophy. And that's not like Coach Andy Reid, but he it's like you always said, like the New England Patriots. If you don't want it, then the other team, you know, the New England Patriots will take it. And it just didn't seem like San Francisco 49ers in the fourth quarter wanted it. And the Chiefs took it. What's your thoughts on the Super Bowl, bro?
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. You had opportunity, and I just look, think about it. With time running off the clock, you had the ball. You were up 10 points in the fourth quarter. That's San Francisco. All year long, they play ball control and have used their defense to control everything to shut teams down. And they appeared to have Kansas City on the ropes late. And they couldn't finish the job. I mean, my heart goes out to those players because they were confident, did a lot of talking, and I think they thought they had it wrapped up. They had done everything they're supposed to do to win it. But down the line, it's like anything else, like we say in sports or anything else. You can make a crossover move in basketball, but you need to finish. It's a pretty move, but you have to finish. And I think that they, for some reason or another, weren't able to make plays, which you had to really feel bad for their defense, because the defense was like, man, we've done everything. We've put Mahomes off his game. But it's like anything else. When you put that out there, you could allow for more opportunity and more time and more chances. Kansas City was able to find their way, and Mahomes got hot at the right moment. He was throwing the ball so far. He was under throwing the ball so many times. I think about the time where he threw the long pass to Tariq Hill, and Tariq Hill had to come back. He had to wait. He had to come back to the ball. Normally, that's a hit him in stride. That right there let me know that even though Mahomes won MVP, that he really wasn't on his game. And to be young and whatnot, and with that defense coming the way that it was, sometimes you're not gonna be at your best. But they were fortunate enough to do enough to win. And again, I'm happy for Andy Reid because he's done a lot of waiting, and he seems a lot of players like Andy Reid. But again, I think I'd be doing a total disservice if I did not mention, like in the first 40, about the way that Eric Bieniemy, the offensive coordinator, made the play calling and what role he played in that and allowing them to move forward, because the pass to Sammy Watkins, it had to be called or it had to be there, the opportunity for him to make that play. And because normally what they were doing is going to their top receivers, Kelce, the tight end, and then also Hill. That's who they look for, and that's what San Francisco knows. But to go out to maybe even a fourth option, Sammy Watkins, with the game on the line, tells you that they recognize something and trusted him. I've always liked Sammy Watkins. I just think he's been hurt a lot, but he has stepped up in a number of ways and big time. He made big time plays in big time games.
Yeah, when I saw that matchup, when it was at the bottom of the screen, I was with a buddy of mine in a tavern, and I'm like, they're going to Sammy Watkins. He's one-on-one with Richard Sherman, and Richard Sherman can't keep up with him. And sure enough, you could just see it. As soon as he got off the line, got inside, and started going to the outside, oh, man, it was beautiful. All Mahomes had to do was just hit him in stride. That's it. And you could see it on Richard Sherman's face, like, man, that might have cost us the game right there. Because that was a big momentum in getting into the touchdown to kind of put the game away. We talked about this on the first 40. I felt Shanahan. I remember texting you and Black saying Shanahan is getting tight with the play calling. And I know Black in the first 40 said that they need to get rid of Shanahan as head coach. I don't necessarily believe that, but I think that he should not be doing the play calling as the head coach. I think another offensive coordinator would have kind of stayed with the running game. And I know you talked about that in the first 40. Stay with the running game a little bit. That was their bread and butter all season. Even though Kansas City was stopping the run. But when you have a team after the Super Bowl said, man, we were sure glad when they stopped running, that tells you that the running game was kind of affected to them. And they didn't want to, really kind of stop or they couldn't stop or felt like towards the end of the game that it would be harder to stop the San Francisco 49er running game. And for him to pull that off and not run clock, have a 10-point lead, you mentioned that earlier in the first 40, even having a league or down four, it almost seemed like they had a knee-jerk reaction of having Garofalo kind of throw the long ball, which we haven't seen Garofalo do that too often. And it just seemed like it was desperation at that particular point. Any thoughts about that?
Oh, for sure. As you mentioned, we said earlier on the first 40 that in their previous game in the NFC Championship game, Garoppolo threw very few passes. And I understand early on in the Super Bowl, they made some calls as far as play action calls that allowed Garoppolo to hit players and open them up for a lot of yards and allowed them to score some points. But the whole point of winning football games or anything in any of sports is to win, is to be the ability to make in-game adjustments.
Yes.
And that was key, in-game adjustments. And when you're winning by 10 points with limited time on the clock, you are a bruising-type old-school football team with Moss Ertz and so many other people that can run the ball. Then you are supposed to do that. And you can't be afraid. If Kansas City is going to get the ball back, then so be it. But if you're at third down, and let's say 5 minutes to go, whatever it may be, even 6 minutes to go, and you try to make a pass or something like that too, why not just run the ball? Because the ball, you can take as much time as you want to, force them to use limited time to make plays. Because, I mean, the first second down in the series, you definitely should be running the ball. You don't take a chance to make a play by passing the ball, because if you don't make the play because they put pressure on Jimmy Garoppolo like they did, there's still a lot of time on the clock. So I think they almost shot themselves in the foot. They continue to get tight, as you mentioned, by giving Kansas City more opportunities. And at that point, I believe, as much as their defense was really trying and was playing real hard early on and really came after, put a lot of pressure on Mahomes, they became shell-shocked. They're like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
We can't let them win. Can't let them win. They say, oh, man, yeah. Another play. And then when you play football like that, you get tight, you get nervous, you don't want to make a mistake, but they keep moving the ball. And you take risks that sometimes don't play off. And the sad thing about it is I think Shanahan's a really good coach. I really do. But he should have had somebody that could pull him to the side and go, hey, look, let's calm down. Let's calm down a little bit, okay? It's all right. Don't worry about Atlanta, okay? Calm down. The game is right here for us. We can still win this football game. And unfortunately, teams go as their leaders go. And
yeah.
I think that's even that defense, the San Francisco defense late, got tight. And the sad thing about it is they got tight. And when they got tight, Mahomes woke up. When they allowed him to wake up by creating plays that he could make, and he had a little bit more time. You also noticed, too, late in the game, he started to move the ball by running it, which he had to escape that pocket because they were coming. And that's what he's been doing all year long. But with that zone, they basically compressed the running lanes. He wasn't able to do that. But that's when that so-called magic that we talk about that he has in his arm and in his feet, you had to do those special plays that kicks people off. You don't want to see it regularly, but that's when you use those magic plays to, and even some of the schoolyard type of escape routes that you use, the tricks you do to help your team move forward. And I think that's what they did. So kudos to Andy Reid finally getting it done. And Patrick Mahomes knew he wasn't perfect, but he was glad to get a win. So, like you said, San Francisco, on paper, appeared to be the better team. They had the defense. They could do this. They could stop that. Everybody had a major philosophy. But in the end, they didn't want it, and Kansas City took it.
Yeah. Going back to San Francisco, is a famous line of Remember the Titans, attitude reflects leadership. And so if your leadership is a little shaky and a little bit conservative, it reflects on the rest of the team. And so you kind of saw it when Kansas City went up 24-20. You kind of seen kind of like it reminded me of the New England Patriot game. It really did. I was sitting there and like, man, this is just like the New England Patriot game with the Atlanta Falcons. You could just see the steam just come out of that San Francisco defense. And then with that last touchdown, when they just couldn't stop. Now, Kansas City is not known as a running team, but when you just run through the line and just, you know, get an easy touchdown like that and go up 11, it was like, wow, that defense, it was just a letdown that they gave up that lead, 21-0 run in the fourth quarter. What do you say to people who talk about how Garoppolo, they need to get rid of Garoppolo and get another quarterback a la Tom Brady? What do you say to that? Because I've been hearing that ever since the Super Bowl, like they need to get rid of Garoppolo. He's not the quarterback. Tom Brady would have came in and done a better job. What are your thoughts behind that?
Well, it's easy to say that when after the Super Bowl loss, right? But you think about how many teams would have loved to be in the position that they were in. So Garoppolo had to be doing something. Perhaps a lot, maybe what they should do, from my understanding, is to bring in some mental conditioning coaches, teaching them how to deal with
mental
adversity. Yeah, mental. Yeah, mental.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, I mean that. I'm just saying and that might even go with the coach too. Because think about it this way: at the end of the day, they played real well against a lot of teams, and they earned the right to be there, San Francisco, that
right.
is. But then on the other hand, you had teams, like I said before, like the Seattle Seahawks knew how to play them. Certain teams knew how to play them well. And then they jump up on Kansas City, and it wasn't that they did not have enough talent. It wasn't – you could always say you need a better quarterback. Okay, yeah, you got Tom Brady or whatever. But this was Garoppolo's first time on the big stage. Really?
Right.
It was. Can we be honest about that? I mean, he's played a little bit. He's been hurt. He's been on the bench, whatever. A lot of the – they brought this team together early. They picked up Emmanuel Sanders, supposedly their best wide receiver late, right? So they're working out the kinks.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's to the point of having to say, okay, we lost. We made it this far. Now let's go back to develop some chemistry. Okay, there's always more things you can do. I think that they could use another younger wide receiver because they don't become one-dimensional. And also, too, give Garoppolo a few more weapons. And if you had a nice – Kittle was nice as a tight end. Let him work his way through so he doesn't feel like he has to carry the load. And I think, too, that if Shanahan starts to mix it up, instead of going one way or the other because of the plan says so, I think it would allow Jimmy Garoppolo, along with the others, to come along. I don't think you have to make any hasty changes. I just think the mental aspect that I'm talking about is the standpoint of, okay, we know we've been here before. We know we can do this. And let's agree that we need to get it done. Because you can talk about things, but it's almost anything else. You have to finish. And I don't know. I'm not saying it has to be a year-long thing. Maybe it's a preseason thing. But I would work on building the mental, putting them in positions, even if you had to throw stuff on the clock. Here's what we have. We have 5 minutes to go. What are we going to do? Even with the coaches. What type of play calling? What would we call here? Why are we throwing a pass when we shoot
right.
the ball? Those are like we know anything else. In order to become, to get better at something, you have to practice. It's called repetition.
You got to practice. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and I think that's part of it. People might think that's small, you know? I don't know.
What we've been doing for the last few weeks is asking each other about what the team that didn't win the Super Bowl, what should they do? I can't see too many things that San Francisco needs to do different. I can't, because Black said it best a couple of weeks ago. They are loaded and they're efficient. And I just think they have to learn from this experience, learn from this adversity to become better. It's almost like in the NBA. I remember years in the 90s or the late 80s, the Detroit Pistons, and how they were going to the Eastern Conference Finals, and they would lose, and they had to come back another year and learn another lesson, going to the finals and losing, and then the third year they kind of figured it out, and then they won the following year, and then won again. It's like a learning process, and I think the public sometimes is so quick to get rid of if you don't win the big one, to get rid of and kind of change things. Where like if you're patient. You know, it's a process to this. If you're patient, this team may find themselves back as NFC champ and in the Super Bowl again. And with that experience that they have, could go a long way. We may see these two teams again, either Kansas City or Baltimore again going against each other. And so don't be so quick to kind of throw Garoppolo away. I think he's a decent quarterback. I think that all quarterbacks have that learning curve that they need to get over to get to a point where they're a championship quarterback. But he's an NFC championship champion. He played in the Super Bowl. He got that experience under his belt. So the only thing I could see changing is taking that play calling from Shanahan and getting a good offensive coordinator to call the plays, and somebody who has that mental stability, not to say that they're not mentally stable at the San Francisco 49ers, but has that wherewithal to say, you know what, we're good. Here's what we're going to do. You're dealing with a calm head who is going to stick with what works and utilize the resources he has on the team to get the job done. Shanahan twice has shown that when it's crunch time, when you have a team furiously coming back and trying to win a championship, that he gets tight. And we were trying to figure out last week who was going to get tighter, Andy Reid or Shanahan? And we got the answer Sunday. Your thoughts to that?
No, I agree with that. I think that it's hard to say, it's hard to see. And the only time that you know that you're only going to find out what's happening is when they're in the moment. And the moment was late in the fourth quarter. Andy Reid's team was down by 10. And Shanahan, once again, was leading. This time it wasn't – they weren't leading. They were leading at halftime. But this time you were really probably, what, 7 minutes away from victory, if not six?
Yes. Yeah.
6 minutes from victory. And he got tight. And it's just – this is the factor of he was the offensive coordinator before, and then this time he was the head coach. And I think the only time you have to learn from different things. And sometimes people or coaches learn, sometimes they don't. I remember you mentioned about the NBA. I remember when Jordan and the Bulls were winning all these games and the Cleveland Cavaliers were loaded.
Right.
With a stacked team, with they had Mark Price, they had Ron, this is before they traded Ron Harper, and they lost to the Bulls. They show the shot where Jordan's jumping in the air over Craig Elo.
Yeah.
But then the Cleveland Cavaliers made real quick changes, these crazy changes. But everybody was losing to the Bulls. Everybody was. So why, I mean, not just you. Everybody was. But the point here was with San Francisco is, don't be so quick, dude, as you said, do not make any knee-jerk reactions. Look at what your free agency situation is. Again, like I said, I think they should get younger on offense. I would go after another younger wide receiver, or maybe even they have decent running backs, but somebody else that way. And you can always use help on defense. I would just kind of add a few more pieces to make them even more dominant with the style that they use. But I wouldn't be crazy with it. And Shanahan's going to have a come-to-self moment and realize that I've come too close now. And now I need to just not be afraid and do what I need to do. And sometimes I did hear this too, that they were talking about, well, he's not going to stop coaching. He's not going to stop trying to make plays no matter what, because that's the kind of coach he is. That's all well and good. But, again, just the game previously, your quarterback threw less than, 10 passes, 15 passes in a game, and they won. And that's why you won. So now you want to be a hero because you want to prove to everybody, or you think that you saw something, when a common sense tells you. And this, I'm not a big analytics guy, because I think you just need to see a situation. Take you back to that Super Bowl with Seattle versus New England. Well, they said statistics and analytics says you can make this pass on the 1 yard line on 4th and 1. You can get this done.
Right.
They're not going to expect it. You also can get it done by handing one of the most grittiest running backs of all time the ball on the 1 yard, half yard line, and let him
get
the damn
thing
and go
home. He's going to get
there
you that.
There you go. There you go. Some things just you have to do. And I think sometimes that even great coaches like Shanahan outsmart themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to take a quick break, man. We're going to come back and talk some NCAA basketball. I'm sitting here watching the Seton Hall and Georgetown game as we speak. This is the Goon Squad Sports Radio Show.
Side. And two from the east.
Welcome back to the Goon Squad Sports Radio Podcast. It is I, Puma, along with Ice Water. Going to talk some college basketball right now. One of the reasons why I love Seton Hall is my two favorite players from last year was Ja Morant and Miles from Seton Hall. And I thought McKnight wasn't going to play tonight with Seton Hall, but he's out there. He's out there, and he's with four fouls right now. So, that shows the toughness of McKnight out there. But Miles Powell is one of the players, man, that I love his grit and I love his determination. Seton Hall's ranked number 12. They're up 61-54 on Georgetown. Georgetown trying to play tough because they have nine losses, which is probably going to put them out of the NCAA tournament. But they know they got to fight and get some big wins. But give me your eye test, man, on NCAA basketball.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. A lot of teams are trying to establish themselves. When you think about it, you say to yourself, man, who's going to win? Who's going to do this? Who's going to be the team that we're going to look for to make that run in the tournament? And that's hard to do right now. But when you look at the eye test, you look at number one Baylor still getting it done, Gonzaga, Kansas still, despite all of the questions, still finding ways to get it done. The University of Dayton, Ohio, is doing some great things. They find ways to run through their conference and make it happen. Duke is trying to make a run back. Florida State is hanging around. Villanova's tough. Villanova got upset tonight. Buzzer beater by Butler.
I'm telling you,
it's crazy out here. So you think you're ready tonight, one night, and one night you're off. It's bizarre. I think I saw, was it Iowa or Illinois that beat Michigan State?
Mm-hmm.
Who was it? Yeah, recently. And
it was
Kentucky
Iowa.
Kentucky had a rough. Iowa, yeah, Iowa upset them. West Virginia was up for a while, and then they were down a little bit. But no, you don't want to hear this, but I'm going to say it to you anyway. I'm going to say it to you anyway. I know I said it. I'm going to say it again. I said it to you last year because you tried to get the man fired. But the Louisville Cardinals are for real, bro. Louisville Cardinals are for real. And I don't know if they go how many games they're going to win in the tournament, but every time I watch them, there's something else that I see. And everybody knows about the center, Stephen Enoch, who's probably one of the best centers in the country. Actually, a native of Norwalk, Connecticut. Did you know that, sir?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
from Connecticut. But that, and just the way that they play hard defense, but they have one of the best-kept secrets in freshman David Johnson. 6'5", 210. He is just a machine. And they finally have found a couple players that can shoot threes. That's what's really blowing me away. That lets me know that teams are getting better. Because you're starting to find out other players, complementary players, that are playing real well. Louisville's one of those. The other team that other teams that find other players that are being complementary, they're secretly helping their teams get along, is Florida State. I was watching them a couple games ago, and now they found a couple three-point shooters I didn't even know they ever had. They had one guy on there, one player had five threes in the first half. I was like, wow, who is this? So there's a lot of pleasant surprises. There's some great basketball being played, and to me, I love just watching all these matchups, and even when you see the top teams are falling down, your Dukes and your North Carolinas may not be there, Kentucky's not having the best of years, it's refreshing to see this parity throughout the season. Who would have ever, the wildest dreams ever thought that the University of Dayton Flyers, the Dayton Flyers would be ranked number six in the country? You can't wrap your head around that. Seton Hall, West Virginia, Oregon is a pretty good team. There's so many teams. I mean, there are, and I love this right now. The Ohio State Buckeyes are trying to find their way. They lost their freshman for a while, DJ Carton, had took a leave of absence. there's some having some issues, mental health issues, and decided to kind of walk away from the team right now. Yeah, so there's a lot going on with these teams, but I tell you what, right now, I don't want to get too close to March Madness because I don't want it to end, but we have had some very exciting teams play against one another. One week they're up, next week they're down. But ladies and gentlemen, pay close attention because you're going to be on the edge of your seat. You might see this year, we had a kind of unconventional national champion last year in Virginia, but you might have the same thing this year with all of the parity that's going on. I love it. I could talk about these teams all day long, but, you know, I love it.
Yeah. Let's go through the top 25. You got Baylor is still there at number one. I'm kind of shocked because the number ones have been falling left and right, followed by Gonzaga. You got Kansas. They're going to play TCU on Saturday. That should be a good game. You have San Diego State, number four. Louisville, who will play, they're playing Wake Forest right now. They're up by five with 11 minutes to go. You have Dayton, who will play St. Louis on Saturday. Duke, check out the guard Stanley. He's been on the highlight reels lately, but he's one of those players that are standing out for Duke. They're going to play in the rivalry game against North Carolina. I hate to see my boys go down like this because it's not a good year for North Carolina. Florida State versus Miami. They're ranked. Florida State's ranked number eight. Maryland, this should be a great matchup with Illinois. They're going to play at Illinois. So Maryland's ranked number nine. Villanova, they just had a game tonight. They're ranked number 10. They play Seton Hall next on Saturday. This is going to be a game to watch, Auburn and LSU. You have Auburn ranked number 11. Seton Hall, they're still playing against Georgetown, and the game is getting tighter and tighter. That's my only problem with Seton Hall is that sometimes I think they play too close to the vest, and Miles Powell is the only guy that could really kind of turn on the offense, and sometimes that gets them in trouble. But Seton Hall is holding at number 12. West Virginia, they weren't even on the map as far as this year, and they are number 13. You mentioned Oregon, they're number 14. You have Kentucky, who's played Tennessee on Saturday. Michigan State plays the rivalry game against Michigan this Saturday. Michigan State fell this week, and they're ranked number 16. Iowa's a really good team that folks are looking past. They're 17. LSU is 18. Butler is number 19. Illinois, really good team, but they dropped one this week also, and they go down. They were number 19. Now they're number 20. Creighton, number 21. A lot of Big East teams are in this top 25. You got Penn State. You have Arizona, 23. You have Colorado, and you have the University of Houston. It's not Fly Slamma Jamma, but they are a good team, and they round off the top 25. Some of the teams that didn't make the top 25 that I think folks need to look out for is Northern Iowa. They're pretty good. Ohio State fell a little bit, but hopefully they'll get back in the swing of things. Marquette is a pretty good team, as well as Rutgers. You do have Virginia, the defending champion, and Brigham Young. Brigham Young is a team to watch out for. And Wichita State, who I think was in the top 25 but dropped out of the top 25 after a loss. I think you're right about the basketball season. I'm loving the parity. Even though the brackets are going to be shot to hell, I'm loving the parity. And every night you're seeing these teams go after each other. I'm trying to figure out why so much parity now. Is it because a lot of these phenoms are going into playing overseas or going to the league right out of high school? I'm trying to figure out what the parity are the seniors and some of the upperclassmen staying in colleges longer. So can you kind of explain why the parity now? What's going on in college basketball?
Well, I think that you're not seeing these top classes or these freshmen. Everybody's going to Duke or North Carolina anymore. I think you're seeing teams that players are going different places. And then other teams that other schools that don't have the so-called top players or these All-Americans, they have older players. You look at the University of Dayton. They've had guards that have been there for a few years, and now they're starting to believe after playing well in the tournament and facing anybody and going against them in adversity, we can play with anybody. And early on, when you play well, like they did, for example, in the tournament, I think the Atlantis tournament over Bahamas, you start to have that confidence, and you get into your conference, and you realize that the talent may not be as good as what you faced earlier, and you build confidence and moxie, and they start winning ball games. And I think that's what a lot to do. Where these phenoms are great, but you have a lot of older players. You mentioned Marquette. You have Howard over at Marquette, who can drop 35 in sleep, easy. And when you have these type of players along with these teams that are starting to build confidence, and a perfect example of, we saw what happened with Auburn last year. They were a blown whistle away from being able to play for a national championship. And they have a lot of returning Letterman along with a mixture of new faces. And I think that's why you're seeing so much parity. And then you see teams like North Carolina suffering a lot of injuries, or they may not have the talent that some people thought. So other teams are like, maybe it's our turn. We're not Duke. We're not North Carolina. We're not somewhere else. But why not us? And when you think about that that way, basketball is a game that's it is based on talent. But it's also is based on will and skill.
Yeah.
And you come in, and somebody might have all of the accolades in the world, but they can be beat. Any team can be beat on any night. And I think that's why you're having a lot of the parity that you are in this current season.
Yeah. Let's move on to the women's basketball in college. And you had a big game this week, with UConn losing to Oregon by 18 points, Oregon going to UConn and going to Storrs, Connecticut. And a lot of people are looking at Geno saying, has Geno lost his touch? Because Oregon has a pretty good team. But I didn't know that they could go into Storrs and beat UConn like that. What's going on in Storrs, man?
Well, I don't think much is going on in Storrs. I think that they've had a nice little run the last couple of years. And then sometimes it kind of falls off, or you may not have that team that may not be a team's not as strong as it has been. The program's not as strong because either a lot of the players that he's recruited still need to develop, and everybody expects them to be like a well-oiled machine every year out. But then you have now a lot of other teams that have been waiting their turn. So when a team like Connecticut is kind of, if you will, struggling a little bit, or may not be as have the right amount of chemistry, they're going to take advantage of it. So everybody wants to beat Connecticut. So if I can beat you by 45 on your own floor, you don't think those teams are rallying for that? So Oregon's of the world. Cool. We know what Notre Dame has been for years, but these teams, I'm telling you, they're excited, and it's not so much Geno doesn't have it anymore. I mean, come on. He's always going to have somebody. I mean, it is, but sometimes it's not your year. But I think tournament time, they'll have them together. But we are so accustomed to them dominating women's college basketball that when somebody else rises up and taps them, and maybe not give them a beat down like what recently happened by Oregon, we're all shocked. Oh, is something wrong with Geno? No, it's nothing wrong with Geno. Maybe the other people, I'm telling you, man, you just can't. I don't think the days of coming out and those women grabbing their jersey and poking their, you know, popping their collars like, we're a UConn, we can beat anybody. Nobody's hearing that. These other kids want to win too. I love it because it's competition. And then it's also going to fire up Geno's team to go, they beat us about 35. We see them again. We'll see what happens. That just, to me, just builds more competition. And he's like, all right, and then, oh, if we can beat Duke. I mean, not Duke. We can beat Connecticut like that. If they can beat Connecticut like that, then perhaps we can too. It just makes for great competition instead of going back in the old school days of everybody gets a damn participation trophy. Anyway, I didn't say that, did I?
So sometimes I look at this as sometimes when you're quote-unquote the elite team, and you have a program that is used to going out and dominating. I don't like the term a good loss, but this may be a good thing for Geno to kind of snap his crew back together, saying, you know what, if we don't play our best game, if we don't really kind of work hard and really come out here and take over games and do what we're capable of doing, this is going to happen. And so maybe he can use this as a springboard to start to run the table for the rest of the season. Because like teams like UConn, like you said, they're used to dominating, being in the top three, if not number one, or beating teams by 18, 20 or more. And when a team comes into your home, into your living room, and knocks over your dining room table, takes your Doritos, and sit on your couch like they own it, and that's what Oregon did, maybe it sends a message to say, you know what, maybe we're not as good as we think we are, and we need to work harder to get better so that never happens again. Because I'm pretty sure that was really embarrassing for somebody to come in UConn. And it's happened before. And they were able to turn it around and kind of run the table for the rest of the season. But sometimes you need to get kind of smacked down a little bit to kind of wake up and say, okay, I need to be on my game. And I want to be a champion here at UConn. And they have a lot at stake. They got a tradition down over there in Storrs, Connecticut. And if these young ladies aren't living up to that tradition, maybe this loss was a good one for them to kind of snap back into reality, work hard, get on their game, and ride this season the way they're supposed to and play the way they're supposed to and just ride it out and to run the table for the next few weeks to get to that championship or at least get to a Final Four. So I kind of looked at it as, okay, Oregon is a really good team. And they came in and they weren't afraid. They weren't intimidated. We're going to take it to them. I know we're coming to Storrs, but we're going to take it to them and we're going to let them know that we're here. And so that's something that they have to really kind of swallow and see whether or not they can come back from this. And I think they can. Because I've heard some people say, well, Geno, maybe Geno's losing it. No, I don't think Geno's losing it at all. I think that sometimes players get tired of hearing coaches bark at them and kind of tell them certain things that they need to hear, but they're not willing to hear it until you have a loss like this. And this is embarrassing, and they should be embarrassed, and it should fuel them to be better. Let's go to the NBA, man. There have been some transitions and transactions in the NBA. I know you're loving the one about Iguodala going to the Miami Heat and helping out your boy Jimmy Butler. But what are some of the other things that you heard as far as the trading deadline ending tomorrow that may possibly happen in the NBA?
Well, everybody's – I mean, the two teams that are really battling, everybody seems like the man is Marcus Morris Sr. He's the major target right now with the Knicks. And the Lakers mm-hmm. and the Clippers are doing everything they can to see who can win that battle. It's crazy. He can help both teams. As you know, if you watch any Knicks basketball, the one constant has been Marcus Morris Sr. This man is playing.
Yeah.
I loved him. I know why San Antonio was upset. He reneged on him because he can go. He can really play the game. And whoever receives him is going to have a guy that's going to give great effort. He can put the ball in the hole. He plays defense. He can do a lot of different things. So that's why they're going that way. I know you mentioned, there was mentioned earlier that the Knicks are doing everything they can to come up and get to grab Kyle Kuzma, which to me is not a bad pickup, and I'm going to tell you why. Kyle Kuzma, he needs to be on a team where he can play and he can start. Because if you look at mm-hmm. his numbers, when he starts with the Lakers, his averages are a lot higher than when he comes off the bench. And with the type of talent that
right.
he's playing with, with the Lakers, he simply is not going to be able to have a chance to evolve. I don't know what the Knicks are going to do, but it would be a nice little talent base to start with. He'd be a nice piece to start with, hopefully, as they turn things around. So he could do a lot. He'll lose a lot early on, but you put him with Barrett and some other folks and get a decent coach over there, decent general manager, then you never know what could happen. So I could see that there. Like I said, we're waiting on Iguodala. That domino has fallen. Other people were talking too that D'Angelo Russell might be moved to Minnesota, and I'm not sure. If it does not happen now, maybe they'll wait till after the season or in the summer to get rid of D'Angelo Russell. But one, there was a very interesting move made by Minnesota, who really loves D'Angelo Russell, and they want him to play with Carl Anthony Towns, one of his good friends. But the moves they made in that recent trade where they were just kind of one of the extra teams, they picked up four players, and they all could be cut, which means to open up cap space. The only person I could really see them keeping, and I'm not sure that's the case, may be Evan Turner. And he has a big contract. But they could cut all four players, and they have a lot of cap space, which opens the door for them to perhaps handle D'Angelo Russell's contract. So that was an amazing move by them. You take on four players who really aren't playing, or they're playing limited minutes, or are not scoring a lot of points, but you bring in, you take on all that salary or to cut and let go and open up cap space to get the guy that you really want. That would be interesting. Now somebody mentioned before that there might be a chance that they might be willing to part with Wiggins. But I think they would have to look at it.
Yeah, I mentioned
his
that
attitude.
Earlier. Yeah.
I'm seeing his attitude, because he can't have the same attitude he has in Minnesota going to Golden State. Or that won't be his last destination.
Yeah, he has all this talent, and it's just not unleashed. It's and his attitude, and that's all it is. He has so much talent. I think that at first we were talking about a few weeks ago that Golden State was interested in Karl Anthony Towns, and now it's switched over to Wiggins. It's very clear that Karl Anthony Towns wants out of Minnesota, and I'm not sure that deal is going to happen. Because the D'Angelo and Towns contracts really mirrored each other, and they could kind of just do a swap, a player for player. But it just seems like it's taken a little bit too long, and then you're hearing now Wiggins is there. Iguodala is a good big pickup, I think, for Miami. Don't know how much he can give them because he's 16 years in the league. But if he can give them a little bit of dog, going down the playoffs, it may be some something that the Miami needs to kind of maybe sneak maybe the first round, maybe the second round, and get into the mix of things. It's really kind of strange that I haven't been hearing too much about I haven't heard too much about Kuzma and the Knicks, but I think that'll be a big pickup for the Knicks, depending on what coach gets there, and that's a good young team. But I want to keep Morris. For some reason, I want to keep Morris because he has the attitude that, you know, we may not win the game, but we'll win the fight. And you need players like that in New York. You need some dogs in New York. But I think Kuzma is a dog, too. And I think you're right. He does need playing time because he's a great offensive threat. And he's not getting that much playing time with the Lakers. And it seems like this would make sense for the Lakers to get rid of some of the players that are not experienced going in the playoffs. And grab some folks that could be role players so that you have AD and LeBron kind of dominating the team and the play, and everybody else kind of falling into their role. So it kind of makes sense with Kuzma leaving there. But if the Knicks can get him and they can land him, I always loved Kuzma, and that would be great for the Knicks. How he would fare, I don't know. But we'll see. Looking at the Eastern Conference, man, you got Milwaukee is 43-7 and the best record in the league, 9-1 in the last 10. Toronto 10-0 in the last 10. You got Boston number 3, 7-3 in the last 10. Miami 7-3. Indiana 6-4. Philadelphia is dropped down to the sixth spot with 6-4 in the last 10 with the 31-20 record. Followed by Brooklyn. I'm still trying to figure out. Brooklyn was number 8 last week. Now they're number 7. I'm trying to figure that out. Kyrie plays like every 3 games, and then he's out for 2 weeks. I can't, you know, Dinwiddie and all that, they must be doing something over there that I'm not really paying attention to. But Orlando stepped into the number eight spot. Chicago, where you at, man? You still in the number nine spot. You let Orlando, you know, jump you. And then pretty soon Detroit and Washington is going to jump you. Come on, man. Come on. The All-Star game is here. Come on, man. But in the West, you had the Lakers with a 38-11 record, 6-4 in the last 10. The Clippers playing tonight against the Miami Heat. They were 8-2. They're number two in the Western Conference with a 8-2 record. Denver moves up to the third spot with a 6-4 record, followed by Utah, Houston at the number five, Dallas number six, OKC number seven, and Memphis. And Brooks and Ja Morant talking smack to the KG veteran Iguodala, putting up memes and tweets and all that other stuff, saying we can't wait to get rid of him so we can go play against him and show him who we are. Give me your eye test and your thoughts about some of the stuff that I just mentioned.
Well, first of all, let's start right there with this. I mean, I've heard a lot of people talking about Iguodala, talking about how he should just go ahead and play with Memphis because now they're better. From the beginning, he had a discussion with the front office, and they said, we know that we're not going to be that good, so we know you want to be traded, so you don't need to just show up and come. And we're not going to just give you away. We're not going to buy you out. We're going to wait on the trade. So that's the case. All right, that was the agreement. Now all of a sudden, because they won a few ball games and Ja Morant is playing well and he's feeling some kind of way, now he want to go after Iguodala. Now you should play with us because, Iguodala, are you freaking crazy? I have reason. I'm glad Steph Curry came to the rescue. He didn't need to, but he did. He's like, wait a minute, young man. You just got here. You have not earned anything. You don't know what it's like to be a champion. And the table was already set. And it's like, well, I don't know why you just don't want to go out there and play. This is a professional basketball player. And he knew from the beginning that's not how he wants to play. So you can be mad at him.
The business.
Get mad at him all you want to. Yeah. Yeah. So he's like, look, I'm good. So he's not playing. And that's okay. So you can get mad, but don't go after him. Don't go after him. And people's like, well, he should be mad at Golden State. No, they made moves because it was time to move on after Durant. So they're making moves. And he might come back down the line if he sits out. So they need to get over that. But the whole situation in the East is just crazy, as you were saying before, from really two through six down from that standpoint of Boston is really looking good. I know they're trying to make some moves, perhaps, and looking at Capella early, but now he's going on to Atlanta. That surprised me a little bit. But Miami,
yeah, me
picking
too.
Up Iguodala, I think it's right in the wheelhouse where they want to go. I think it pumps them up, gives them a lot of space to learn. And Iguodala can teach a lot of people a lot of different things, and it makes them a lot tougher. Indiana, I think, is kind of finding their way through some things. Philadelphia, I don't know what the hell's happening. I really don't. So who are you going to blame this week? You know, who are you going to blame? I mean, this time, Brooklyn, love them or hate them, they're finding a way. I love it. They're finding a way to get it done. And I don't think the players on that team, minus Kyrie, are getting enough credit for what they're doing. I mean, they're, it's not pretty, but, hey, it's not their fault that the rest of the East is not playing well. And you mentioned before that the rest of the conference sucks. Maybe it does. They're just doing what they can do to be the best that they can be. And that right now has them in the seventh spot of the East. So I don't know. We'll look there. Lakers still doing their thing. Clippers are 3.5 back. What I find interesting about the Clippers is they're using this time management thing. I know people hate that because players are not playing, but they're still only 3.5 out. And you imagine if you get Marcus Morris Sr. over there, oh, my God. Woo! You put him with Montrezl Harrell, oh, my God. You think they're good enough defense-wise now? Woo, that's going to be nasty. Denver is playing pretty well. They're still hanging around. I think people are pumped up about Utah just a bit. I'm not sure if Utah is that good, especially when they have Mike Conley Jr. coming off the bench. And Houston, with this change, they're going to have a 6'8 center. How do you trade Capella and Ray Mack? I like, you know, Chandler, but how do you trade Capella and Nene? Oh, my goodness.
They don't know
what
they're doing. They don't know what they're doing.
He at least was a double-double machine, averaging about 13 and 10. And then Dallas is right there. We'll see what happens there. I think they're another one or play, two players away. Memphis is hanging around. But it's going to be interesting. But we know it probably comes down to the Lakers and the Clippers. You saw that today.
Yeah.
It would be Memphis versus the Lakers. It would be the Clippers versus Oklahoma City. This is interesting. Denver versus Dallas. I think that would be a good one. Utah versus Houston. So it would be some interesting matches, especially that Denver and Dallas.
Yeah. But I see this changing a lot. And, you know, I'm going to put a mark right here. I'm not sure Memphis is going to make the playoffs. Because you got to, I mean, you have some experienced teams that know how to make a playoff run after the All-Star break. And the teams I'm talking about in the West are Portland and San Antonio. Not sure about New Orleans making a move and Phoenix. But those two teams, San Antonio and Portland, you got to think that they're going to start making some moves after the All-Star break. And you got Ja Morant and Brooks. These guys are very young. Going through an 82-game season is treacherous. And so can your body withstand? You know, it's not college where you go play 30, maybe 32 teams, games top. Now you got to play 82, and now you got to go to the playoffs, and then you got to bring that up to another level. Maybe. And I think Memphis is really good. They have a young team. But I don't think that the grind of the NBA season, they're going to be there at that number eight spot. And maybe OKC because Chris Paul, and he knows how to, you know, maneuver his way in. Maybe they get the number eight spot, but I'm looking at either Portland or San Antonio to overtake and get that spot, maybe the eighth or seventh spot when it's all said and done. What are your thoughts on that?
No, I mean, I can see that. I can see them making moves because, as you mentioned, the lack of experience. I can see that. But it's so wide open and all of them teams are just barely getting making it through. So you have to ask yourself, we'll see what happens. San Antonio, they're trying, and maybe because they have Pop, then they'll get back up into the conversation. Portland, with the changes they made, hope that they can make that move. But those young guys and John Morant, they will not go, and Jackson will not go along quietly. You're going to have to beat them. And the other thing that you see how making moves where I think the Heat are trying to also picking up Danilo Gallinari from the Thunder.
Wow, and, okay.
Yeah, but that would be another – I mean, I'm telling you, Pat Riley is not playing, bro. He's not playing, and he's going for the juggler. So you can play around if you want to. Again, like I said, you can clown Jimmy Butler all you want to. You don't think he's a leader. I've heard that before. But I'm trying to tell you, when it comes down to the get down, you might want to be careful before you start to throw some things away. I also saw recently that Sacramento traded Dwayne Dedman to the Hawks for Jabari Parker and Alex Lynn. Dedman is going back to the Hawks where he started. So, but that you never know. The Hawks might have a little something going on down there. So, I don't know. There's a lot going on. We'll just have to see how it plays out.
All right. We got a little bit over 30 minutes left in the show. We might talk a little bit of baseball. We might get some more questions from the Goons. There was a guy, who an old preacher, I sent you the story, who said he's suing the NFL because because of J-Lo and Shakira. We'll talk a little bit more sports right here on the Goon Squad Sports Radio Show. Welcome back to the Goon Squad Sports Radio Podcast. It's I, Puma, along with Ice Water. If you're on YouTube, check out our first 40 show on YouTube on the Goon Squad Sports Radio Podcast page. We put a number of shows up there. You can hear the first 40 minutes of the show. Of course, this is overtime with the Goon Squad. I'm watching your boy, Jimmy Butler. He got 2 points. They're going towards halftime in the second quarter. And I guess because he's playing against Kawhi Leonard, he ain't going to bust 38 tonight.
First
come
of all,
Iggy.
Why you,
come
why,
on, hurry
why,
up,
man. Wait a minute, wait a minute. Why do you – see, that's wrong right there. Why
he can punk Philly. He can punk Philly. And he can punk Minnesota. But he ain't punking the Clippers. That's
not even fair, though. That's like, I mean, everybody's having issues with everybody has issues with the Clippers. That's not fair. See how you are? That's not even fair. You say that. See how you are? That's not even fair. Who's winning the game, though?
I mean, it's 49-44, you know, with about a little over 3 minutes in the
okay.
quarter. But that's going to change. That's going to change. It's 50 now to 44.
Jimmy
Butler
well,
with 3 points.
And Paul George
points.
Is playing tonight.
And still with
Paul
three
George
points.
Is,
this is
Paul George is playing tonight. Yeah, yeah, he's playing
Paul
tonight.
George has 7 points. Kawhi has six. But, you know, that's going to change. Kawhi got the ball now. We're Jimmy. Okay. There you go. Come here,
what's
Jimmy.
Score?
Come here, Jimmy. It's 50-44. It's early.
All right.
Where you want to go, sir? Where you want to go? I'm gonna let you determine what we talk about next. Where you want to go? Baseball? You want to go with some of the stories you put on the Goon Squad page or the Reality of Sports page? Where you want to go, sir?
We can talk about baseball real quick.
All right.
We can talk about,
the trades.
With Mookie.
Like I said in the first 20, I don't understand why the Boston Red Sox would give up a guy like Mookie Betts, because to me, the top two players in baseball right now is Trout and Mookie Betts. And so if you were just doing this, it's almost like Boston decided, you know what, we're going to take the Oakland A's route and play money ball here and maybe sign a bunch of players and see what we can do. But if you are doing this and then you have to contend with the New York Yankees, you know, in the AL and the Houston Astros and some of those powerhouse teams in the AL, it almost seems like they're rebuilding it right now, getting rid of Mookie Betts. What are your thoughts about the trade, man? And David Price never really kind of panned out for the Red Sox as far as he was under too much pressure. It was always like he was fighting the fans and fighting the press, and now he's in L.A. where they're a little bit relaxed over in L.A., but they could still get on you. What are your thoughts about the trade?
Yeah, well, the main thing was, too, that the Dodgers came up. They picked up Price. Price can if he still has anything left. He can come back and move forward. They want to move forward there, too. The other part is they didn't have to give up. They have two notch prospects in Gavin Lux and Dustin May. They didn't have to give up either one of those. So that helps you from that standpoint. And they are – the Dodgers have been trying a long time to get this thing right. And finally they think what – having this much talent is going to be hard to mess it up. I really do think. I think they really believe that. So, I think they really feel very comfortable where they're at, Dodgers that is. And they're going to be ready. They're going to be ready. It will be interesting to see them versus Washington and see how that plays out. Because, you know, Washington, I'm sure they think they're going to repeat, but the Dodgers are like, we're all in. And I'm sure the manager is probably saying the same thing. I'm so tired of I'm just tired of of all everybody's talking about us, tired of everybody telling us what we can't do. And I'm sure that the Dodgers believe this is their year. So I'm excited for them from that standpoint. I mean,
Last year was the year. The year before that was the year.
The
Dodgers, you know, it's like until Kershaw always bothers me because Kershaw is like one of those guys that it seems like in the playoffs, he just doesn't have it. He will pitch himself into a mess and then try to pitch himself out of it. It's almost like a challenge to him. And then he can't get out of something, and then he's out of a game. He's knocked out of a game. So I think they should have moved him when they figured out that when this guy, when the pressure's on, he can't do it. But right now, it's like until the Dodgers really kind of do it, then, okay, they can make as many moves as they want because they wanted Cole, and then the Yankees got him. And so
right.
I think this is like the second best thing to them, getting this guy, Mookie. But until they actually do it, I'm not going because they had the guy who they picked up from Baltimore who went to San Diego. What's the guy's name? I forget the baseball player's name. And he spent a year with the less than a year with the Dodgers. Was it Maldonado?
Yeah.
And you know that didn't pan out, so they lost the bidding wars on him. And so, to me, and the Dodgers are one of the teams I follow, and it's one of my dad's favorite teams, if not his favorite. I think it is his favorite team. He follows the Dodgers. But until they do it, until they actually win the World Series, because they've been there a few times, then I'm not really kind of impressed. I think Mookie is one of the best players, but I want to see them play. I want to see what he does with the Dodgers. And until I see that, and they have the stuff, to me, to win 100 games, 100 plus games. But to me, that won't mean anything if you can't win the World Series, in my opinion.
I agree.
And so,
I agree with that.
Yeah.
I agree with that. But
so,
see, here's my thing. So they have, not to cut you off, I'm sorry, but they have Mookie Betts now. Now you also have Cody Bellinger. Cody Bellinger was the 2019 MVP. I mean, he had 47 home runs, 115 RBIs over 156 games. They just signed into a new deal the other day. And this guy's back in January, but this guy's young. And I agree with you. They have all the pieces. If they're going to win it, the time is now. They should be a little pissed off because everybody's saying they should get the little fake trophy because Houston cheated and all that. If I am the Dodgers, day one, I'm in training camp, I'm the manager coming in saying, I don't care about how much money you make. I don't care about this and that. I want to know who on this team wants to win a championship. And that's all I'll be focusing on. The regular season is great, but I want y'all to use the regular season as a stepping stone to perform in the postseason. And that's what we're going to say from day one. So we're not going to get too high about winning our division. We're not going to get too high on winning over 100 games. We need to get high about going to the postseason and delivering. That's what I'm saying. That's our goal. And that's what I'd be telling my team.
Okay.
Everything else is okay. And I'd be saying, we got to beat the hell out of Washington. Anyway, that's just for me. Anyway.
You're starting up on the Nationals already.
That was a tough one.
I didn't see Washington, the Nationals coming, and you know, just taking it from everybody in the National League. I mean, where they came from and where they ended up, it was like, wow, that was a remarkable year. That was a remarkable year. I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't do a Disney movie on what they were able to do. That's like a Major League kind of move right there, the movie Major League. So that was kind of like a real-life Major League because they were dead to right. They were tied with Detroit, the Detroit Tigers, during the season, and then they just came out and was just start whacking everybody. There's a big fight coming up this weekend with Bone Jones. I intend to try to get to watch it. You know how we do. when we're on these pay-per-view fights. What do you expect to see from Bones Jones?
I think he's going to try to come out strong. The last time he fought, he seemed like he was a little rusty, and people were looking for a lot more. And I think if he's going to move up, because now there's talk that he's going to possibly move up to heavyweight. And he wants to fight Daniel Cormier again. He does, legitimately. But Cormier is supposed to be going against his Stipic. Supposed to be a rematch with him, the gentleman from Cleveland. And he's basically saying he's done with John Jones. But I think deep down inside, he knows. You can say what you want to about the drugs or whatever, the failed test. He knows deep down inside, Cormier knows he can't beat John Jones. He knows that.
Wow.
Yeah, he just does. I mean, because even when you say what you want to, John Jones, he has his number. It's been bad nights for him or whatever, but I think John Jones wants to come back strong. He wants to show you that he's ready, and if he's going to make that jump to heavyweight, he's going to have to be stronger. He's going to have to be on top of his game. Last time he was off for a while, said he was rusty. We didn't see the regular, the exciting John Jones we're used to, but I think he needs to make a statement here against a very, very well tough opponent. It should be interesting. I love watching John Jones. I think he's one of the most talented fighters they've ever had. He might be one of the best of all time. But I just think him, it's always been a lack of focus. And because he's so talented, he doesn't really feel like he has to really – he appears to be like he doesn't really take it so seriously because it comes so natural to him.
Okay. I'm expecting a good fight. I'm starting to get more and more into the MMA and the UFC. And starting to familiarize myself with that. I'm also starting to familiarize myself with international soccer in the Premier League, in the France League, and all those different leagues. And I think some of my friends who are in it, and they have dogs in the race. I haven't picked a team. I don't think I'm going to pick a team. I just love watching the different leagues in soccer. It'll be interesting to see this particular fight. And if he goes to heavyweight, it'll be interesting to see him and how he fares at heavyweight. He just seems like a very destructive force in the UFC, and not too many people want to tangle with him. And he just seems so lanky and skinny that you don't expect him to have that much power fighting. But, he has some power and he has skills. He has some real great fighting skills, so it should be great. I'm not even going to mention what's happening on the 22nd because you want to talk about that every week. So I'm going to bypass that. But I want to talk about this preacher, this Christian preacher, who says he's suing the NFL for the halftime show because of Shakira and J-Lo put him in danger for hellfire. Now, I'm trying to figure out, did he have a remote close by that he could change the channel to maybe the Dog Bowl or something else, or turn to Murder, She Wrote or some kind of Christian show, Creflo Dollar or something like that for 15 to 20 minutes so he didn't have to sit there and watch these two young ladies just shaking that thing? Your thoughts about this story, man?
First of all, I think it's pretty sad that you have a pastor that's supposed to be leading people. It's just my opinion. Watching such a thing, and now he wants to sue them for it being on television. You can always, I think Black Door mentioned earlier, and even on our private chat, that you can turn it off. You can turn it off. But I think that's the easiest thing. But to try to blame somebody for something because, the freaky dicky part of you was coming out, and you had a hard time turning away. I mean, who the hell can you blame the NFL for that? I mean, you could always turn it off until the game began, but to continue watching and now you want to say just a whole point of stage of ill repute and whatever he may be trying to say is, I think it's totally ridiculous. I really do. I think it's really ridiculous. I think that he needs to just come down and just go, look, hey, I don't recommend it. Come on, man. I mean, nobody made you watch that, right?
Maybe he hurt his wrist. Maybe it's some.
Oh my God! Oh,
he was watching. Really? Maybe he injured his wrist, man.
He might have, but that's still his fault. Again, you don't have to turn it on the TV, right?
Yeah.
You don't have to turn on the TV.
Wow.
You can always cut it off, and then you can say, I don't think you should watch this from your bullpen or whatever. But evidently, he must have liked what he saw. And then he felt some kind of way after he realized that his freak was coming out, and then he was feeling that he was could no longer be a man of God because he let his freak get out. Then, of course, it wasn't his fault. It had to be who was showing it on TV. But we're not talking about a strip club, bro. You talk about TV at all. Anyway, sad. It's really sad.
Well, Pastor Lil Woody, we're sorry that you had to watch that 15 minutes of all that gyration. We are so sorry. Change the channel next time. I think he would have had a fit if he saw Janet Jackson. But anyway, let's go to questions from the goons. what's your first question, sir?
Let's see. First question. How do you, with all of this that's going on, we're starting to see with Black History Month and everything too. I heard something earlier today. Do you think that Colin Kaepernick is getting good advice? And what I say by that, what I mean by that is, do you think that if he had somebody else kind of advising him or telling him a different way to go about things, and he would actually maybe not be in the league, but he'd be further along and being a voice that people want him to be? Or you think he's just good where he's at? I know that's a lot.
I don't think it would have been any different because I kind of saw the NFL trying to use him as an example. And I think, you know, the way he handled things, the way he stood on his principles, I think he's good. Does he want to play football? He does. I think he really does want to play football. And I think he made his effort doing that, but he didn't want to do it and put his principles aside. And so, it was interesting that you mentioned this with the Kaepernick situation, because now Jay-Z and Beyonce are in hot water about sitting down while the national anthem is going on. And now he's backtracking and trying to explain it away and all this other stuff. And I'm like, bruh, you fell for the trap. They got you, because it ain't about the NFL anymore. It's about you now. And so there was a tweet that went out. And I don't know if Kaepernick really did the tweet, but he said, the tweet said, but I thought it was the Kaepernick thing. The kneeling was, we were past that though. And so that's, now you're getting the clap back, because when we saw this happen with Jay-Z kind of stepping in with the NFL, basically what they did is kind of put him in front. Now he's the subject and he's the lightning rod, and the NFL is just standing back like, we don't know anything about it. We had nothing to do with this. And so, now you're on the wrong side of history. You're on the wrong side of history, man. And so, you know, the things I did read about it, I think I skimmed over a story about how he was explaining that they were kind of looking at the talent and made sure everything was going well. Dude, come on, man. Now you're in the hot seat. Now this could affect your bottom line. You're confused. And so you turn your back to try to make a buck off another brother. Now you're sitting here in the trick bag. But I think he's done exactly what he wanted to do. And I don't think he's you know, would he like to have played in the Super Bowl and been in the NBA, NFL and all that? I'm pretty sure he had. But he wanted to. But now he decided, you know what, I'm in this, I'm committed, and whatever comes of it, comes of it. And I truly believe that's the way he thought about it. And so whether I play football or not under my rules and what I believe in or not, I'm good with my life. The article that came out after the Super Bowl is that he spent his Super Bowl helping people. That's what he wants to do. He wants to be a servant of other people. And I commend him for it. I commend him and I respect him for it. So whatever just came out and fell out from it, it just seems like to me he's good with it, because it's like whatever the fallout might be, I'm willing to deal with this because this is a sacrifice and commitment I'm making.
Yeah, I can see that. But I hope you realize that he's not playing the league ever again, bro. I said that to you a long time ago. I just don't think so. And I don't think so. In regards to that Jay-Z, you mentioned about Jay-Z and them getting clapped back, that's not going to last long, I don't think, because the NFL still needs him. And they're not going to be satisfied until they get these top-notch African-American or people of color acts on that halftime show. And they want that. They want the whole shebang. And I think they believe Jay-Z can help them with that. And he's probably sitting at the table saying he wants this, he wants that, for what he's going to help them do. So it's a lot going on there, too. I do think Kaepernick, like I said, I think people want to hear from him. Maybe he won't do it. He don't want to do it, does not want to do it, but I think people want to hear from him. And I think he has even more of an impact if people heard from him. But he's doing it his way. And I don't begrudge him, because he's doing it his way. And he's the only one, in my opinion, I said this to you before, that truly is taking the stand by himself. You know, other guys are trying to make ways. The other way, from the Malcolm Jenkins of the world to even Jay-Z, had their own way that they say they're trying to make a difference. But he's the only one, even with his buddy Eric Reed, that stood pat. Because say what you want to, I like Eric Reed, but Eric Reed went back and got that money. It's hard to say.
Yeah.
Well, man, I know you drown. I know what it's like, man. But you sitting on the porch. You don't have to, you ain't in the ocean swimming. you up on the
okay,
beach.
Okay, I'm gonna stay with this subject, bro. All right. So Jay-Z is supposed to attract black acts, right? How do you have a Super Bowl halftime show in Miami and not have Luke Campbell dancing at the Super Bowl?
Wait a minute. First of all, can
no
we be
Super
real?
Bowl halftime show
come on, come on.
With
Luke, see, look,
without
look.
Without Doodle Brown, without, you know, pop that coochie.
Come on, man. Look.
Trick Daddy and Trina. Come on,
man,
bro.
You trying to get everything shut down. You might as well go to the strip club. That's where they going to be. You talking about going to the damn strip club. Come on, man. You know, look, they would shut the NFL down. You know, they did what they supposed to do. They had more of a Latina, Hispanic type of feel. That's Miami sound machine.
Bruh.
But you cannot, man. Are you kidding me? You can't, man.
Come
nah,
on, man.
That's the after party. That's the after party. You can't handle that, man. See, you're gonna be a family oriented show. You trying to get the damn NFL shut down? They're not doing that. You
it's
know,
the
Barry
Super
Matt.
Bowl, bro. Everybody drunk.
Hey.
Bring on the Luke dance. There's still some little
kids watching, man. You can't do that, man. You cannot do that. They will be sleep.
Usher
they
in
will
the
be
next 100 years,
bro. Nah, man. You wrong for that. You can usher it in, right, at the after party. Get it. Yeah, you can do all that at the after party. We're not doing that. You imagine the sponsor.
I would have.
That was probably going on at your house. You had them dancing. You might have them dancing in the second half. You didn't see the rest of the game. You missed the rest of the game.
Oh, man.
Yeah, you can't do that, man. Come on now.
My question real quick, 5 minutes left to go, is we don't know the final kind of moves that are going to be made in the NBA, but so far, who's made the bigger impact on their team with the moves?
I gotta say Miami, man. I do. I believe that.
Yeah.
Especially they get Gallinari as well. I think that because they are already showing you that they're capable of making stuff happen. And to give Pat Riley and that crew another weapon, and Iguodala, who's been there before, and somebody that can play defense on some of the best players in the league. And they play real hard. So all they have to do now is get ready to see if they can play against the big boys as you move up, which is almost, five up. So that means you're looking at from seed four
Milwaukee,
on up to the top. Yeah.
Toronto, Boston,
mm-hmm.
and who else?
I wouldn't even say Philly. I wouldn't say Philly. Philly. Philly's digressing. The other one, too, though, I do think, I know they're still hanging around, but I got to throw Indiana in there. I think they're going to be hard to beat. I would throw Indiana in there as well. I think they're going to be very difficult to handle for somebody. Yeah,
I'll have to agree with you. Miami's made I think the great move to get Iguodala in, but I just want to see what he can give them, how he can fit in, and what he can give them. I think the bonehead of the trade right now, if I had to pick one, is Houston, because who's going to play defense? Who's going to protect the who's going to protect the rim?
I'm looking here too. I did not know that that Miami also have Kelly Olynyk from Boston on there. Oh my goodness!
Yeah, I'm watching that now.
They got some real dogs out here. Oh my God, they got some real dogs. Boy, you did not. Watch out, Miami.
Yeah, but the Clippers are within three, within one.
Okay.
They got that dog Beverly.
Yeah, well, we know that, though. Come on, man. This might be the NBA champions. Come on, now don't be Iguodala's on his way.
All right, any last second shots, bro?
Just from the standpoint of good year so far, man. Looking forward to doing some great things. Just want to continue and improve on what we're doing. Hopefully at some point we'll get our music show, the one, off of the ground. But loving this and loving the people for tuning in, and we're going to continue to try to be the best that we can be for the year 2020. And please, if you have suggestions or comments, hit us up and let us know, because we want to bring you what you want to know more about and also just improve, become better at what we're doing.
Yeah, my last second shot is to one of our biggest fans, Natalie, who put a comment on our YouTube page, who says you guys were – right on target for the most of the year. You guys need to be on TV. Really appreciate that comment. Somebody else other than us recognizing that we need to be in prime time on one of the sports outlets or create another sports outlet. So really thank you for the comment. That was really kind words and shows that folks have been following us throughout the year with our NFL picks and things of that sort. So shout out to Natalie for doing that for us. That's going to do it for our show today, this week. We will hit you up next week. Take care.
Love you, Natalie.